Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 372 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in today's podcast, I'm going to be talking about headaches. In fact, I'm going to be calling this the Clutch Headache Podcast. The thing is, whenever you take a USMLE exam, you know, a few questions on headaches typically pop up. This is for step one, step two, CK, step three. So again, if you understand what's going on here, you can easily get these questions right. If you're taking the USMLE Step 2 CK or Step 3 or Comlex Level 2 or 3 exams within the next like 3 weeks or 4 weeks, I would recommend taking the courses I have next week. It starts with the MBME Test Taking Strategies course on Monday and the 24-hour Step 2 CK / Step 3 course taking place from Tuesday to Friday from the 22nd to the 25th. If you're interested, they're going to be held over Zoom. If you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website. Again, I've had tons of people take these courses and they've done extremely well on the exams. I've had people, even their QBank percentages improve like 10, 20, 30% from taking the test taking strategies course. I've had people's scores on the exams improve 30, 40, even 50 points after taking my review courses. In fact, yesterday, and the good thing about the courses is they're not stale. I don't like just keep going over material from like 10 years ago that no one cares about. No, we know that the MBME is the adjust things every year, right? So I make very continuous adjustments. It's almost like a software update. I make pretty continuous adjustments to the material. So again, what you're going to be getting is something that is very relevant to your current exam. So if you're interested in any of these courses, again, test taking on course on Monday, 24-hour review courses on Tuesday through Friday, just shoot me an email through the website. I'll give some more details on registration, on cost, and things like that. Again, the courses are going to be held by Zoom. So shoot me an email through the website. There's still some spots available, and I'll be happy to have you registered. So let's talk about headaches, right? So what in the world does it mean to have a headache? Well, having a headache means your head hurts. That's it. Having a headache means your head hurts, right? And the thing is, you know, there are many types of headaches. I mean, like for those that are going into internal medicine residencies, you learn, or neurology residencies, actually, you learn about a ton of different kinds of headaches, right? But for the most part, the big headaches you want to be concerned about are tension headaches, migraine headaches, right? And cluster headaches. Now, there are many other kinds of headaches which we'll address, actually, right? But we'll address them more in vignette form, because those are ones that the MBMEs typically will just, every now and then you see a question on those. But definitely the three primary headache syndromes, tension, migraines, and cluster headaches, you absolutely need to know a lot about, right? So I guess the first thing is more epidemiology, right? What's the most common kind of headache? Well, I would hope you're saying, oh, Divine, it's going to be a tension headache. Tension headaches are very common, right? They're very, very common. The second most common kind of primary headache is a migraine headache, right? Cluster headaches are not as common, right? So, you know, what if they give you a question about a person, they tell you that they have this pulsatile headache, right? And this headache many times is accompanied by nausea. They have to be in a quiet room, in a dark room, and fall asleep for a few hours before they feel better, right? That's going to be a migraine headache, right? There's going to be a migraine headache. Many of these things are just about recognition. And I will explain some pathophys behind headaches that may help you organize some of this material in your mind, right? But the thing is, many times on MBME exams, it's not about recognizing that a person has a migraine. The MBME kind of surmises that at this point in your medical career, you probably know how to recognize a migraine. The thing they go after is how you treat it. And many people tend to mess this up. Now, it's very important for migraines to differentiate the treatments as acute treatments or prophylactic treatments. If a person has an acute migraine, the thing you want to give them is a vasoconstricting drug, right? Like a triptan, like sumatriptan or an ergotamine-based agent. Now, if you don't see sumatriptan or ergotamine as an answer, you can pick the answer that says NSAIDs, right? You can pick the answer that says NSAIDs. The thing is, actually, for most migraines, NSAIDs are pretty good as abortive therapy. But it's when they start having like migraine plus, where they start having like nausea, vomiting, phonophobia, that's when you begin to go into the triptan or the ergotamine territory, right? Now, remember these drugs, they are vasoconstricting drugs, right? So they are not drugs you want to give to people with certain problems, right? So say, for example, if a person has variant angina, which was previously called Prinz medial angina, that's a disease as well as coronary vasospasms, right? That can certainly cause problems, right? Or remember people that, let's say, for example, they've had like pulmonary emboli, or they've had myocardial infarctions in the past, or they've had like strokes, especially like an ischemic stroke. Giving those people triptans may not be the smartest idea in the world, right? And remember, tryptans also contain serotonin, right? So they can absolutely cause serotonin syndrome on exams, right? So like, you don't want to be giving a person a tryptan and like an SSRI or a tryptan and a TCA. You know, things are not going to end well for that patient. You don't want to do that, right? And then remember that for you to say, oh, I'm going to put a person on migraine prophylaxis, they actually need to meet certain criteria. You can't just give everybody migraine prophylaxis, right? The people who give migraine prophylaxis are people that have 8 or more migraines a month. That number is very high yield to know. So if a person is having 6 episodes of migraines a month, they are not candidates for prophylactic therapy on NBME exams. But if they have 8 or more migraines a month, they are absolutely eligible for prophylactic therapy. Right. So what is this prophylactic therapy? It can be something like a beta blocker, right? It can be a tricyclic antidepressant, especially people that are depressed, right? If a person is depressed, then, you know, giving them a TCA is maybe not the worst idea in the world. You can also use topiramate, right? Topiramate, many people call it, I think, Topamax in the hospital, right? It's also very good as migraine prophylaxis. Now remember, topiramate, right? It can cause like cognitive slowing. It can kind of make, it doesn't like mess up your brain, but it can just kind of make you slow mentally. Right. And don't forget, topiramate also likes to cause kidney stones. Right. So they can give you a person that was recently started on migraine prophylactic therapy and has this acute onset flank pain radiating to the groin. I want you to think about topiramate toxicity. It can cause a crystalline nephropathy. Right. And don't forget your tricyclic antidepressants. Right. Remember, they can widen your QRS. They can prolong your QT interval. They have these anti-HAM side effects. Right. So anti-H1. So they can cause sedation. Right. Anti-alpha-1. They can cause orthostatic hypotension. Anti-muscarinic. Right. So they can cause those anticholinergic side effects. And then don't forget that these tricyclic antidepressants, right? Don't forget that, again, people actually use these things to commit suicide, which is pretty unfortunate. And we're going to treat the toxicity with sodium bicarbonate, right? Because remember, these TCEs, for the most part, are also sodium channel blockers, right? So that's the way you handle migraine prophylaxis. Now, how about a tension headache? How does that present? Well, it's going to be like a person that has been in a stressful situation or a tired situation, for example, like studying for USMLE exam or just taking a USMLE exam. Right? Many times these people, they won't have nausea, they won't have vomiting, they won't have any auras, right? Like we may see in migraines, right? And, you know, most times it's going to be like a band-like pain. It's going to be on both sides of the head, right? How do we treat these people? Just give them an NSAID, tell them to relax and chill a bit, and they'll be fine. Right? Now, what if they give you a question about a person and they tell you that they have this intermittent headache, right? Shows up as like a short, severe pain, right? Around, usually the pain is going to be severe around one eye, right? It's unilateral. That's a very high yield thing to know. Cluster headaches are unilateral, right? So it's pain around one eye, right? And then they have all these autonomic symptoms, you know, so they have like tearing in the eye, redness in the eye, nasal congestion, right? Sometimes they may even have this thing we call a partial Horner syndrome, right? So they will have ptosis and meiosis, right? But they won't have anhidrosis, right? When you see those things, think of cluster headaches, right? Again, cluster headaches is one of these things you want to be careful of, right? How do we treat it acutely versus how do we prevent it, right? So a person has an acute episode of a cluster headache, right? Go ahead and give those people 100% oxygen. You know, just high flow oxygen. It's really helpful, right? But if you don't see that as an answer, you can also give a triptan. Triptans are actually first line agents as well for treating a cluster headache acutely, right? You can even use these triptan nasal sprays, right? Now, the thing is, for prophylaxis though, right? If a person is having so many cluster headaches and you're like, man, okay, what can I do to prevent these things from happening? Consider verapamil as first line on your exam. Remember, verapamil is one of those non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers. Remember, verapamil can cause a lot of problems, right? It can cause bradycardia, right? A class 4 antiarrhythmic can cause bradycardia. Because it blocks calcium channels, it can cause constipation, right? Because you kind of need calcium for your smooth muscles in your GI tract to contract. And don't forget that, verapamil can also cause hyperprolactinemia, right? So it can cause low libido, galactorrhea, gynecomastia, and stuff like that, right? But again, for prophylaxis against cluster headaches, verapamil is first line. If you don't see that as an answer, consider using steroids, right? Many times they use like a 10-day course of steroids, and it's very helpful in these people. Or you can also use lithium, right? So lithium is not only for, psychiatric disorder? It's not only for a person that is bipolar, right? You can also use it for cluster headache prophylaxis, right? Now, what if they give you a question about a person, they tell you that they have this lancinating pain over their face, right? And it's worsened by like wind blowing over their faces or them lying on their pillows or whatever, right? This is going to be trigeminal neuralgia, right? The key thing is just this lancinating, just really, really terrible pain. It can happen actually a lot. It's actually more of a seizure disorder than an actual headache, right? But we're going to let that go for now, right? So how do we treat trigeminal neuralgia? They love to test this all the time. Remember, you're going to use carbamazepine, right? You're going to use carbamazepine. Carbamazepine is an anti-epileptic drug that is great for treating. It's actually first line for treating trigeminal neuralgia, right? Now, don't forget, carbamazepine can cause lots of problems, right? It can cause granulocytosis, you know. So they can give you a question about a person that was started on, you know, therapy for this trigeminal neuralgia, and they develop like a fever, right? Think about granulocytosis from carbamazepine. Remember, it can also cause neural tube defects, right? It can also cause SIDH, right? So they can give you a person that has like hyponatremia with very hypertonic urine, right? Now, let's just go over some other quick vignettes that may point you towards specific diagnoses on exams. Think of this as kind of like a rapid review of headaches, right? So if they give you a question about a person that has a stiff neck and a headache, what are you thinking about? I really hope you're saying, oh, Divine, you know, this could potentially be meningitis, right? Or they give you a question about a person that has like a headache, they have fevers, and they have neurodeficits. It's a triad. Fevers, headache, and neurodeficits. I hope you're saying, oh, Divine, this person potentially has a brain abscess, right? If you don't see that as an answer, you know, you may pick the answer that says encephalitis. But typically, I'll say almost like 95% of the time, that's going to be a brain abscess on your exams, right? Or what if they give you a question about a person that has like sudden onset severe headache, right? And let's say they have a history of like Marfan's, right? Or they have a history of autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease. Or it's a person that has a history of hypertension, which is actually the biggest risk factor. Or the person has a history of like Alzheimer's or something, right? You know, like amyloid angiopathy or whatever, right? I would really hope you're thinking about a subarachnoid hemorrhage. Remember, for that, you're going to do a non-con head CT, right? If you don't see anything, you're not done. You're going to do a lumbar puncture looking for xanthochromia, right? And don't forget, those people, after you treat them, you're going to give them nimodipine to prevent that post-stroke vasospasm, right? Or you see a person that is an older person, you know, they have this chronic headache, accompanied by nausea and vomiting, right? And you notice that that headache is worsened by changes in position, right? If you see that, I want you to think about a brain tumor, right? Or it can be really bad in the morning. Think about a brain tumor. Many times for those people, you're going to get an MRI of the head, right? You're going to, not a CT scan, an MRI of the head, it's going to be great to find that brain tumor. You know, in an old person, we're probably worried about glioblastoma multiforme, right? In a young kid, we're worried about like a pilocytic astrocytoma. Remember, pilocytic astrocytomas are the most common brain tumors in kids, right? And then in adults, it's going to be GBM, right? Glioblastoma multiforme, right? Obviously, GBM is a terrible disease, right? Now, what if they give you a question about a person and they tell you that, you know, they have like this, you know, just fevers, weight loss, really bad headache, right? And it's very worse on the sides of their heads. And they tell you that, oh, wow, this person has like pain with chewing and they have like pain in their proximal arm muscles. If you see that, right, that's going to be temporal arthritis, right? Remember, for these people, you're not going to be messing around. You're going to go ahead and give them a ton of steroid. You're going to give them like IV steroids. Right, and then you can do the temporal artery biopsy. You have about 3 days after the symptoms start to do a temporal artery biopsy to get healed from the biopsy, right? But again, you're not going to be trying to delay treatment because you want to make the diagnosis. No, and it's usually going to be in a woman on your exam, although they can give it in men on tests as well. Just go ahead and treat those people first, and then treat first, diagnose later. That's kind of like the name of the game with temporal arteritis, right? Or you see a person, they have like severe headache and they have like this fixed mid dilated pupil. If you see this, right, think of about like an acute angle glaucoma, right? Especially like this headache that just starts suddenly, right? Suddenly. Let's say they go into a movie theater, right? Because they just, when you go into a movie theater, because of the darkness, you're going to dilate your pupils, right? If you see that, think about an acute angle closure glaucoma, right? For those, you can give like timolol, eye drops, you can give pilocarpine, right? You can do a laser iridotomy, right? Those are things to keep in mind, right? Or they give you a question about like an obese woman, you know, they tell you that she has like headache, blurry vision, and she's on OCPs or acne medications. I want you to think of pseudotumor cerebri, right? These days, they call pseudotumor cerebri idiopathic intracranial hypertension, right? Or you see a person that has been on NSAIDs, you know, they start taking NSAIDs very regularly for like chronic headaches or whatever, or, you know, I mean, for chronic like joint pain or back pain or whatever, right? Think about something we call a medication overuse headache, right? Many times those people, the way you're going to fix the problem is tell them, stop taking those medications. It's going to be terrible for a few days, but things are going to get better. Right, many times before a great calm comes, there's usually a storm that comes in, right? I'll probably talk about a quick life lesson there at the end here with that, right? And then if you see a person that has like a sudden onset severe headache and they have like a known like prolactinoma, for example, or, you know, any kind of pituitary adenoma, if you see that, I would really hope you're thinking about pituitary apoplexy, right? Remember, pituitary apoplexy is like a subarachnoid hemorrhage. of the pituitary gland, right? Usually it's going to happen in a person that has like a big massive adenoma, has like no relationship with pregnancy at all, right? They have like this big massive adenoma, right? And then they just bleed into said adenoma, right? That's going to be pituitary apoplexy, right? Or you see a person that has like very severe headache and they just had like recent blunt force trauma to the head, hitting the head by a baseball bat, blah, 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 blah. Then think about an epidural hematoma, right? Epidural hematoma, right? And then the last thing I think I'm going to say about headaches, because this is actually going to be a short podcast. You know, headache is not a long topic, but it's a very high yield topic, right? What's the primary pathophysiology behind just headaches in general? Again, this is a gross oversimplification, but this is something that may help you learn this material well. The primary pathophysiology behind most headaches, to be honest with you, is actually vasodilation. That's the truth, right? Vasodilation causes headaches in the intracranial vessels. So many times the drugs we use to treat headaches are vasoconstrictors. I mean, just think of it on the most basic level, right? Many headaches are treated very nicely with an NSAID. Well, how do NSAIDs work? They inhibit cyclooxygenase. If you inhibit cyclooxygenase, you're going to make less in the way of prostaglandins. If you make fewer prostaglandins, then you're going to have less vasodilation, more vasoconstriction, and headache goes away, right? So vasoconstriction is the pathophase behind the headaches, right? And you can already see that if you have a vasoconstricting disorder, like variant angina and things like that, you know, triptans may not be a good idea, because triptans, being serotonin receptor agonists, can absolutely cause a vasoconstriction, right? That's one of the ways they help in people that have migraines, right? So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams, step one, step two, CK, step three, preclinical medical exams, third-year shelf exams. And then if you're an internal medicine resident, I do offer tutoring, one-on-one tutoring for the internal medicine in training exams, the internal medicine board exams, the ABIM board exam. And then if you're looking for, again, if you're taking the USMLE step two, CK, or step three, or the complex level two or three courses. Again, I have an MBMA test taking strategies course and a 24-hour review course. Those are taking place next week from Monday to Friday. And I also have a USMLE Step 2 CK school. It's going to be taking place in the summer. It's going to be 75 hours long. Basically, if you're taking the USMLE exams in the summer and you want like an extremely comprehensive, super thorough review, that, you know, pretty much attempts to cover the vast majority of what's tested on the USMLEs, I would encourage you to attend the school. And, you know, for the school, there's going to be a lots of really good things, right? We're going to be reviewing content, right? Like a ton of content. And again, we're going to be using primarily vignettes for most of those things. And then we're going to have an adaptive learning section for about 10 hours, where we use like the keyword strategy that's used in many anesthesia or radiology residencies to very rapidly review lots of content. And then we're going to have an expanded test taking strategies course. I do have a podcast where I specifically talked about this school. It's called the DISC, D-I-S-K school. Again, I'm going to cap it at 40 people because I really want to invest in every single person attending. It's in the first 2 weeks of May, right? So if you want to reserve a spot, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. And then I have a YouTube channel, you know, Divine Intervention, USMLE podcasts and videos. That's where I post the videos that I make. And then I have these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, at least the most recent 150 podcasts. If you want everything from episode 1 all the way to 372, which is this one, then you need to go on the website, divineinterventionpodcasts.com. If you actually have a WordPress account and you subscribe, you'll get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. And then the next thing I want to say here is I do have a new website. It's called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons website. In fact, it's literally divineinterventionlifelessons.com. Again, many of you that listen to this podcast know I'm a Christian, and I've gotten tons of emails from people that, wow, Divine, I love these little life lessons podcasts you put at the end of, you know, I mean, life lessons that you put at the end of your podcasts. So people have been like, wow, Divine, I really love these things. So I just figured I'll just make a separate website where I, you know, use Bible-based teaching to address common problems of humanity. I think right now I have like 59 episodes. I post about 2 every week, and most of them are like 10, 15 minutes long, right? So if you want to listen to those, kind of like a devotional, that's perfectly fine, right? I even have the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons Podcast. So what's the final thing I want to say today as a life lesson? Remember, before any great calm, usually comes a storm, right? So I think many people think that when they're going through stormy situations of life, they say, oh man, this storm is going to kill me or whatever. No, right? Just remember, there's no problem that does not have an expiry date. At some point, a problem is going to give way. At some point, a problem must end, right? But again, many times, because think about it, right? Like when you have like a really bad severe snowstorm or really bad severe rain, right? You know, it looks like, wow, everything has gone off the rails. But you notice that after that great rain, then comes a great calm, right? So I would just encourage you, because to be honest with you, I know in medicine, we face some very tough situations, especially with COVID and just all the stuff that's been happening in the healthcare system, the challenges with, and you know, there are many challenges in healthcare, right? So the thing I would just say is just be calm, calm down, and everything is going to be fine. Just remember, just wait out the storm, right? Do your best in the storm, but remember that that storm is going to be over at some point, right? Again, remember, right, even before day breaks, right, you're going to go through nighttime, right? There's usually going to be some nighttime experience, right? But after that nighttime ends, day comes, right? So just keep up your hope, keep hope alive. I'm just trying to use this to encourage anyone that's just going through a rough patch now. You know, there's so many things happening in medical education now with the match list going up, rank deadline, blah, 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 USMLE exams changing and all that stuff, right? So just keep hope alive, right? All is going to be well, right? You need to work hard. You can't just wait it out. You need to work hard, but remember that tough times, they don't last, right? But tough people do. So thank you for listening to me today. Have a wonderful day. I will see you in the next podcast. God bless you. Thank you.